Want to give the group a little time to get in here. I know the community guys might be at work or riding or something. I want to make sure that everybody's in here, at least a small percentage of you guys, before we kick off the show. What's up, Shine? You're always in here, Sheem Lindsay. I appreciate you for showing up. This is the Wagering World. I'll give it about one more minute before we kick off the show. Let some more eyes get up in here. Here we go. Of course, you can always catch the show like most people do, whether it's on YouTube, which I prefer, so that you guys can subscribe or hit that like button to get us going in the algorithm. Or you can find me on iHeart. You can find me on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Spotify, anywhere that Audio Boom provides podcast. You'll find the Wagering World with 5-star in Vegas. All right, I'm gonna let a couple more people get in here before I start. Make sure you throw up your comments, any questions. I'll make sure to answer them before we get off the show. This is gonna be a really packed show, a lot of great information. All right, let's kick it off. I'm at a good number right here. What's good, Wagering World? It's your boy, 5-star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World. I'm one deep like my boy, Zero the Crooked, today, because this season I decided I'm spread and Sino always part of the Wagering World. But at the end of the day, this is my baby and it's my job to make sure you guys get the info out. A lot of busy things going on in those guys' life, with Sino moving, with Spread now dealing with a family situation. So when they're available, they will be here, but I cannot allow me waiting on them to stop you guys from getting the information. You guys trust me to provide the information. And my favorite sports show growing up, and the one that kind of inspired me to do the show, was the Colin Cowherd show. And Colin always rocked by himself. He ended up, you know, putting in co-hosts later, but most of the time he was speaking by himself. And if I have to do that to get this information to you guys on Mondays and Wednesdays, I'm going to make sure that I do it, because you guys have been loyal to me. You've been rocking with me now for 4 seasons. A lot of you guys have become more than just guys in the community. You became my friends and we have a personal relationship, whether we spoke on X or met in person before. And I think that it's my duty, as a guy who takes pride in giving back, as a guy that takes pride in mentoring, to make sure that I get these shows out to you guys. So I cannot wait on my co-hosts when they are not available anymore. From now on, I'm just going to get on here and go one deep. And it also gives me an opportunity to speak with you guys more in depth on the questions that you might have, and just to, you know, try to help you guys get to the window. That's what this show is all about. Get some comments. What's good, G-Swag? I appreciate you being in here. My boy Carlos always been down with me now since the beginning, man. He's a member of the private group. Love working with Carlos, man. He says five. He's going on live on my lunch break. That's beautiful, man. Good thing. My boy Tim, another member of the private group. Shout out to my homie Tim. He says, hit that like button. If you guys are in here rocking with the Wagering World, hit that like button. All right, let's get into the show, guys. Now, let's start with the past. Gotta always review. It's always about being transparent. We learn lessons from our L's. We don't take losses, only lessons, man. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get through on the two-leg WTA that I gave out on Monday. we took at the China Open, which is a huge tournament, one of the last 1,000 tournaments of the season for WTA. Christina Busca takes care of her business. She came back from 0-5 in the first set to still win that set against the young lady, Carly, young Argentinian lady. So she takes care of business, 2-0 sets in that one. But unfortunately for us, we weren't able to get there with Giacomo. I think Giacomo was tired. She had went a lot farther than she was supposed to. What's up, Brandon? Good to have you in here, man. What's up, fam? She went a lot farther the prior tournament. She played in Guadalajara, which is a 500. She made it to the semifinals. If you followed Elsa Giacomo's career, she is one of those ladies that's kind of caught up in between the 50 to 125 range or so in rankings. She's not a consistent performer on tour, but she had been playing well. I think she just kind of wore out because it's a long flight going from Guadalajara, Mexico to Beijing, China. She loses to a young upstart lady from Andover, Jimenez Costa-Tensiva. I think Costa-Tensiva has a bright future if she could just stay consistent with her work and just stay doing what she's doing. Left-handed girl, when she's right, she can give people some problems. Not much pushback from Giacomo. I think she just made the trip to go get her check and, you know, kind of mailed it in. Even more so, she became a lucky loser because somebody was able to not continue. So she was able to get back into the tournament, and that still didn't make a difference. So she ends up losing last night again as a lucky loser. Actually, I faded her. So we weren't able to get there on the two-teamer, but we do still have Jensen Brooksby, a guy that's out there from Sacramento, like spread. He's going against Hugo Humbert, and that's going to be in the Japanese Open, the Japan Open, which last year Arthur Fiese won us a lot of money on. We rode him to the title on that one. And, shout out to Arthur Fiese and his team. I hope that he heals up. He broke some bones, I want to say, in his back. That's bad for a tennis player. So hopefully we do see the Arthur Fiese that we saw in the past. Now let's get to the Monday night football game, which we did really well on in the group. And if you watch the show, I was on the opposite side of spread like the Ravens. And I told you guys, I definitely leaned on the Lions on this game. And I also liked the over on it. We were able to get through on both of them. This game boiled down to the brilliance of Dan Campbell, man. I think because he looks like the Big Lebowski, people think he isn't smart and doesn't have a lot between the ears, but he actually does. Dan Campbell is the Detroit Lions. He's the guy that changed the entire culture there, and he's also the guy who brought that offensive system, that aggressive nature with them going for it on fourth down. As two great plays on fourth down stick out to me during that Monday night matchup. The first one was on fourth and one from the Ravens 4. You saw Amon-Ra St. Brown line up in the backfield as a running back next to Jahmyr Gibbs. They ran a really slick play by handing the ball to Amon-Ra St. Brown. He runs the option and pitches it to Jahmyr Gibbs, and he pretty much walks into the end zone. The game was 21-21 at the time. Troy Aikman and Joe Buck were talking about maybe Campbell should kick a field goal and just take the lead, but he's aggressive, man. That's his nature, and it spills over to his team, and that's why they're so confident. I have no worries at all about the Detroit Lions. As you guys know, if you watch the show, I picked them to win the NFC North before the season started, and I still believe that they do so, even though they have a really hard record. I saw some guys on X who follow football who were saying something about maybe the Lions are still using Ben Johnson's playbook, and that couldn't be further from true, because actually, if you do research, you'll see that when Dan Campbell was assistant coach, offensive assistant coach, I think he coached tight ends first, and then he did some other things under Sean Payton for the Saints. They ran that exact play where they put Taysom Hill in the backfield behind Drew Brees, and they had Alvin Kamara as the pitch man. So, you know, that wasn't a new play. That wasn't something Ben Johnson created. I think that's something that Dan Campbell came up with. And another great play in that game that showed the brilliance of Dan Campbell. It was 4th-and-2 from the Ravens 49. They were up a score 31-24. They could have easily punted and tried to pin the Ravens down, but instead they're aggressive because Dan Campbell is smart enough to understand that, hey, I'm not going to be able to stop Lamar consistently. Even though our defense is playing well tonight, we're not going to be able to consistently get this guy off the field. So let's go on to be aggressive and keep the ball and try to score again and try to win this game. He runs a really slick play-action play with Amon St. Ra Brown. If you remember, all game, Amon St. Ra Brown was coming on a little wobble to the backfield almost from the slot position and becoming the lead blocker out of a single back formation for the Lions and lead blocker for Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, whoever was in the backfield. They run the same play, but they go play action, and they pop St. Brown on a corner route, and he beats Marlon Humphreys. Marlon Humphreys grabs him, gets a defensive holding call, but they still complete the play. St. Brown is just a great player. He, the type of receiver that you want. He's not a diva. He blocks. He runs the ball. He can throw the ball. He, as you saw, he can run the option, and he has, you know, just great hands. Always comes up big, and he's key to everything that they do on that offense. Really good showing by the Lions defense. Bringing back Aiden Hutchinson is huge for that defense. I was speaking to Paul Maldonado on ESPN, and she's a really good follower. If you haven't followed Pam, follow. She's a really sharp lady, works for ESPN. Pam was saying she was so surprised by the Lions defense in this game against Lamar, and I was telling her that Aiden Hutchinson coming back at defensive end is the equivalent of a star quarterback coming back to the offense. A rush end who's a playmaker is that important to a defense. And as you see, their defense looked a lot better. The player of the game was Aiden Hutchinson doing the peanut Tillman punch and making Derrick Henry fumble, as Henry now has cost the Ravens 2 victories. First in Buffalo in game 1 of the season that, you know, kind of kicked off Sunday night football. And then now, again, we see him cost them the game on Monday night football as they have an opportunity to drive and tie the ball game up. But instead, the Lions get the ball back and they pile on and score another one. Really good showing overall by the Lions. I was really enthused by their young defensive coordinator, Kelvin Shepherd. He still looks like he can get on the field and play himself. He's 37 years old. LSU guy, so you know I'm really familiar with him and really am rooting for him. He's been on the staff with Dan Campbell now since 2021. He started as a linebackers coach, and he and the kid Malik Cunningham, who actually was mentored by Lamar Jackson, played at Louisville after him, was out on the Ravens for a while. Dan Campbell's so smart, they go sign him to the practice squad and bring him in and get him to replicate kind of what Lamar Jackson has been doing all season. Dan Campbell says in the presser that the first day they tried to defend it, Malik Cunningham was killing them. So it allowed them to see what adjustments that they need to make. And he did such a good job with kind of showing them what the Ravens like to do and what Lamar's tendencies are, that it set up Shepard to set up a really good game plan. And this might be the blueprint for slowing down Lamar Jackson. They really confused him. A lot of people are talking about the 7 sacks, but most of those sacks weren't on the offensive line. A lot of those sacks were on Lamar because he got confused. They were taking away his first 2 reads, and then he was going to tuck and go up the middle and try to take off and show that 4-3 speed that he always does. But with the spy on him, Alex Anzalone, who's a really good tackler, guy with some speed, they were able to slow him down. And not only that, their defensive linemen really stayed in their lanes. That's the problem with a lot of teams do against mobile quarterbacks. They allow those quarterbacks to find seams because they're trying to, there's such a hurry to get to the quarterback and get a sack. As we know, defensive linemen, their contracts are based on being able to get sacks. So they were real, you know, most teams are really, really just antsy to go get to Lamar and get him down, and they don't stay in their lanes and they create huge seams, and that's where he burns you, and that's where he's able to show off his speed and elusiveness. So they were smart to stay in their lanes. Anytime that he moved forward, that allowed Anzalone to come up and make the sure tackle. And if he didn't, he slowed him down enough where a guy like Muhammad or Hutchinson could come from behind and make the sack. Just a really, really good game plan. You even heard Jackson saying to me that he said that they were doing stunts. They had a spy, and sometimes that spy was grabbing my legs. They were dropping into coverage, three safeties back. He was really confused, man. So just an excellent job by the Lions staff. They're one of those teams who are always the most prepared. That's why, in my opinion, right now, Dan Campbell has to be the best coach in the NFL. Like, it's between him and Jim Harbaugh, in my opinion. But I lean more Dan Campbell because Dan Campbell is a little bit more aggressive. Dan Campbell is also really good at getting in game plans to have his team ready. And they run a little bit more exotic packages on defense and offense than Los Angeles does. San Diego Chargers, who I grew up with, LaDainian and Tomlinson and those guys, Junior Seau, rest in peace. But yeah, Dan Campbell, in my opinion, is the top guy right now. He has his team more prepared than anyone. Matt LaFleur, of course, is up there really high. But a lot of these teams have a lot of talent, but their coaches are kind of setting their ways. And one of those is Andy Reid. I feel like he's still a good coach, but he's going to have to switch up some of the play calls that have worked for him with that West Coast offense for a while, because it's getting a little stale over there in Kansas City. They are missing their wide receiver, so I will give him some reprieve. But right now in the game, I think Dan Campbell is the best head coach. All right, man, let's get to a segment that I call the show, actually. It's called Contender or Pretender. All right, let's get to Contender or Pretender. I made this segment because it was very important to me to identify which guys can we trust right now in college football and the NFL. Like, it's very, very important for us to break down these teams, not get caught up with anything but the data. We want to see the data with these teams and figure out which one of these teams can we continue to invest in, and which one of these teams can we start fading later on in the season. Let's start in college football first. I want to start with the Texas Tech Red Raiders. This is a team that, if I'm investing, and you guys know I look at sports betting like investment, and I've done really well with coins before, real estate, a little bit on the stock market back when they had the stuff going on with GameStop. I was able to make a little money on that stuff because my boy out in Oklahoma, Junie, shout out Junie, got really heavy into the stock market, and he came up really big off of GameStop. I made a little money off of GameStop and a couple more of those companies that went down during the stock market during 2020. Well, if you're a stock investor, a coin investor, you need to invest in the Texas Tech Raiders long term. I think that this is a team and just a program that's on the way up, man. They have everything going right. And what was most impressive for me is they had this influx of money come in as billionaire Cody Campbell, who used to be one of their offensive linemen back in the day. And he made a bunch of money in the oil business and decided, hey, I'm going to figure out a way to help my team become one of the top schools in football. Well, they did a good job because they spent $28 million in NIL money, only second to the Texas Longhorns, but they spent it really smartly. You know, like, they didn't spend their money in the wrong places. I feel like they did a really good job focusing on the trenches. You know, besides the quarterback, Baron Morton, they gave him $1 million, but in today's landscape of college football, that's not really a lot of money. They gave him $1 million, but shoot, if you look at their team, their backup quarterback is actually better than him, in my opinion. You know, we'll see as we move forward. But I do like how Texas Tech spent their money going to get defenders, man. On defense, they went and got some really good players. David Bailey, Romello Height, Lee Hunter, Skylar Gil-Howard. And out of those guys, the highest paid is David Bailey. He makes $1.2 million. He's a linebacker they got from Stanford. And he's been key to their offense. Those guys are playing so well. Utah is one of the best run teams in the country. It's really hard to stop that run game. They have maybe one of the best offensive lines, not only in the Big 12, but in the nation. And still, they were unable to move that defensive line for Texas Tech. Texas Tech's defensive line was ranked third coming into the year, and I think they're living up to that preseason ranking, man. They are really good up front. I really like their head coach. People were wondering, why did they get Joey McGuire? I remember asking my boy Doc, shout out Christopher Levine, Christopher Laverne, apologies to you, Doc. Dr. Christopher Laverne, he's out there in the Woodlands, really good cardiologist, really close friend of mine. I've been a member of the group for a long time. I asked him, he's a Baylor alumni, one of the biggest guys in the know with Baylor. I asked him about Joey McGuire upon the hiring, because Joey McGuire came from coaching linebackers at Baylor under Dave Aranda. And Doc was saying, everyone loved this guy. You know, in the building, he was just really beloved and was really known for being a really sharp guy. And it's showing now. This is the first team he's had in his three seasons that's a real roster. And I think that we're going to see that Joey McGuire was definitely the right hire for Texas Tech. He's a defensive first guy. Before being a linebacker coach at Baylor, he was at Cedar Hill. Shout out to my sister, Tanisha. My sister lives in Cedar Hill for many years now. She's moved. She's in Plano now, but she was in Cedar Hill for many years. She was a pharmacist out there. And Cedar Hill High School wasn't known for football. You know, McGuire took on the program. It hadn't had a winning season in years and had never won a playoff game. As the head coach there for 13 years, McGuire went 141-42, and he led them to four state championship games. And they won in 2006, 2013, and 2014. They got the runner-up in 2012. So that alone shows you that he is a program builder. He knows what he's doing when it comes to creating an atmosphere of winning for his team. Also, he's completely tapped in with the Texas high school football. You know, like, he knows all of the players, all the coaches. So they're going to really do good with recruiting. And now that they have the backing with that money that's coming in from their billionaire investor, as well as Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is now the face of Texas Tech football. He wasn't that successful there, but he's been a great NFL pro, one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history. If he retired today, he'd be a Hall of Famer, and he's now synonymous with that Texas Tech brand. So that's really good for them when it comes to recruiting. Defensive side, they're solid. So many playmakers on the offensive side. I love that kid, Dickie. He's so versatile, really a gamer. I do like their starting quarterback, but I probably like their backup quarterback a little bit better. Freshman Will Hammond really showed me a lot. This kid has balls of steel, because you don't come in Salt Lake City against a defense like the UTEP and perform like he did as a redshirt freshman. Just a really good player. He was the best player on the field when he got in the game for Texas Tech, even better than Devon Dampier, in my opinion. Morton got knocked out in the third quarter, man, after a helmet-to-helmet hit. And when Hammond came in, he was a little sluggish at first, but after he shook off the jitters, man, he showed up. He delivered two touchdown passes. He led four scoring drives in the fourth quarter, and he helped spark that decisive decision. This kid came from Austin. He went to Hutto High School outside of Austin and was a really good player. He led all Texas quarterbacks in passing yards and passing touchdowns his senior year. And when you do that in Texas, that means you're going to be a really good player, man. So I think that Texas Tech is set up to be a really good team. They have a really light schedule, excellent head coach, two solid quarterbacks, a defensive line that ranks third in the country, and playmakers everywhere. Their toughest games left are at Houston. I don't think Houston can give them any problems. I'm a fan of the Cougs, but Connor Wegman, I don't think he can beat Texas Tech, honestly. Then after that, they got Arizona State in 2 weeks, and that's on October 18th. I think that they're set up to go undefeated this season. So I'd say that definitely Texas Tech is a contender for sure to get to the playoffs. I take them to win the Big 12 right now at plus 240 with their schedule and how it's set up. I think that it's going to be very doable. All right, let's get to the USC Trojans. They have a great start alone when you just say Lincoln Riley. You know what he's done for quarterbacks. He's the only coach in college football that last week had three of his ex-guys that he taught that were starting in the NFL, you know, in Caleb Williams, and Baker Mayfield, and Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts' entire ceiling changed from going to play for Oklahoma. When he played for Lincoln Riley, Lincoln Riley taught him so much about the pass game, taught him so much about reading defenses, and gave him confidence to throw the ball. Because if you remember, Jalen Hurts was pretty much a glorified running back at Alabama. Nick Saban did not trust him to put the ball in the air. And at the time, they were running a much different offense than Alabama's running now. But he was limited, and Lincoln Riley really helped him. Lincoln Riley now has Jaden Maiva. Jaden Maiva came from Las Vegas. He was originally in Hawaii, but he came to Las Vegas and graduated high school and was a really solid player. I talked about him so highly as a freshman. I could see his poise and his leadership skills, even as a freshman starting at UNLV. His family makes the right decision and takes him to L.A. to be up under Lincoln Riley, man. And that was the best decision he's ever made. It's going to make his family millions because he's going to be drafted and playing the NFL now, because that's what Lincoln Riley's track record is when it comes to quarterbacks. USC is currently, they're ranked number 21, undefeated, as you know, 4-0. They have a really strong offense. They're averaging 52.5 points per game. What I like about them is they're very, very efficient. Jaden Maiva leads the country in QBR. According to the odds makers, USC has the 6th best odds of winning the Big Ten this year. So you can get them at plus 1,400. Maybe not a bad investment if you look at their schedule. The other 5 teams above USC would be Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Michigan, Indiana. They only face 2 of those teams on their schedule moving forward. They are a team that's penalized a lot, and that's been one of the things that's been an issue for Lincoln Riley throughout his career. It's because he lets his guys play loose. He makes them confident. He likes them to play fast and not thinking. And they're averaging 8 penalties per game defensively. They have to clean that up for sure. But that offense is really good. I like both of their running backs. They're missing their star receiver, though, Jacoby Lane. I think he will be back soon. He didn't play against Michigan State, but I think that he would be ready for the games that matter when they play Michigan on October 11th. Shout out my little brother DJ again. That's his birthday, actually. And then the Big Ten very much may be decided on 11/22. That's my mom's birthday. Rest in peace, my mother. November 22nd, the Trojans are going to travel to Oregon. That might decide the Big Ten. But besides that Michigan and Oregon game, I think that their schedule is very doable. They don't face Ohio State or Penn State. They would get those guys in the championship game. So USC does have an opportunity to do some big things. Tough test this week when they go to Champaign. Illinois has to be really upset with the fact that they got embarrassed at Indiana. But I don't know. Brett Bielema, to me, is just a horrible matchup, you know, when it comes to Lincoln Riley. I'm not taking Illinois against Lincoln Riley. I'm just not. Brett Bielema has shown in the past he's too conservative, and his offenses are much too vanilla to threaten a play caller like Lincoln Riley, who just knows how to put points up. The USC defense, they've had trouble stopping opposing offenses at times. Last week they gave up 5-11 on third down conversions. They also allowed the Spartans to move the ball. They scored 31 points on them. But a good thing about the Trojans is if they get ahead, they do have a really good pass rush. They are first in sacks in the whole country, tied with Maryland and Buffalo. So that's a good thing. But as we know, Lincoln Riley's teams are never going to be defensive first. They're always going to be about USC. So I'd say USC is definitely a contender. I think they can make the playoffs. And I think that Lincoln Riley is really just under the radar. He's moved to L.A. because Caleb Williams was kind of loose with the ball. And last year he didn't have his typical quarterback in Miller Moss. He tried to be kind because Miller Moss had been there. And, you know, Lincoln Riley was one of those guys who stayed 4 years and didn't get his shot at Texas Tech until, you know, being there many years on the bench. And I think he kind of felt that way about Miller Moss and was like, I'm going to help this kid out and give him an opportunity since he was so patient. But he never was the player Jaden Maiva was, and he wasted a year last year getting Maiva ready. Maiva ended up starting midway through the season. He should have started the whole season, honestly. But he made the adjustments, and I think USC will be around at the end. So I'll name them as a contender. 4 more teams, we're going to find out if they're contenders or pretenders this weekend, and that's when LSU visits Ole Miss. That's going to be a huge game. I think that Ole Miss will still be playing their backup quarterback, but he may even remain the starter now because he's played so well. can LSU find any offense? I feel like their defense is outstanding. Funny thing about that game is that Ole Miss's head coach, his daughter is dating Week Weeks, who's the star player for the defense at LSU. So we'll see if Lane Kiffin's daughter gives a little intel to Weeks over the weekend. LSU kind of knows some of what they're doing. Then the other big game is three, actually. Alabama plays Georgia. I feel like Georgia's definitely a contender every year under Kirby Smart. Big win for them at Tennessee. We see if Alabama can go there and do anything. Bad omen, though, for Georgia. They will be doing a blackout. Last time the Georgia wore all black, they got smoked by Alabama when they came in town. So that's something to keep an eye on. I think Ty Simpson is playing some really good football right now. We'll see if his receivers continue to excel, as now Alabama's right up there with LSU and Ohio State as receiver U, places that really good wide receivers go and excel. Now, they've been like that ever since Julio Jones. But the other game of pretenders and contenders would be Penn State hosting Oregon. It's going to be a whiteout. You guys know, if you watch the show long enough, I do not believe in Drew Aller. And I definitely am not high on, James Franklin. They just showed in the past a tendency to underperform in big spots. Last year, they did play well against Oregon in the Big Ten Championship. They did make it to the playoffs and played well and, made it all the way to the end. But Drew Aller was the reason why they lost that game to Notre Dame. And I just can't trust him against Oregon. I feel like Oregon is set up to be a better team long term. I also think that Dan Lanning is a just better, aggressive young mind, better coach right now at this stage of his life than James Franklin is. I think James Franklin is kind of setting his ways. They do have one of the best backfields at Penn State. So if Oregon can't stop the run, they're going to have a long afternoon out there in Happy Valley. But if they can shut down the run and turn into Drew Aller having to beat them, they're going to be in a really, really good spot, because I just can't see Drew Aller beating anyone. He's just not a good quarterback. He plays a lot smaller than his 6'5 frame. All right, let's get to the NFL and talk contender or pretender. All right, let's start with the team we just spoke about on Monday Night Football, the Ravens, man. The Ravens, they're not a contender because their defense, man. I don't know what Zach Orr is doing over there. The Ravens are currently among the lower tier teams on NFL in defense, particularly struggling against the run. As we saw, Detroit manhandled them on the line. Now, I know that they were missing a really good player for them, Madubuku, who's a low-key all-pro, one of the best D-tackles in the league. And, we don't pay a lot of attention to that position unless you really are watching all 22s and really understand football. You don't really pay too much attention to the D linemen outside of the rush ends who get the sacks and the splash plays. But D tackles are very, very important to a scheme, and they're missing their guy. And he was replaced by a rookie last week, and he got pushed all around the field by that Detroit Lions offensive line. Also, Kyle Van Noy, they're going to need him back. He's their playmaker. He's their signal caller on defense. He's not the signal caller. Forgive me. Their linebacker is the signal caller that came over there from Georgia. But Kyle Van Noy is their playmaker for sure on the defensive side. They have to get those guys back on the field to do anything. Right now, they're allowing 22.7 points a game. It would be a lot more if they didn't play Cleveland in week two. Total yards allowed, 315 yards per game. They're allowing 109 yards on the ground per game. And the third down conversion rate for offenses against them has been 40%. And another really alarming thing is that teams have a 46% success rate on the run against the Ravens. I also think that John Harbaugh, man, he blows too many leads, even when they're up and they're cruising. And it's because I said the defense, their defensive backs are terrible. Marlon Humphreys is their best corner, and he's not a good corner. at coverage, at least. I think that he's a really good blitzer guy to use in exotics. I think he'd be much better at safety, but they're forced to use him at cornerback. So the Ravens are just going to be in shootouts pretty much all year, and that's not going to work when it gets cold outside and winter comes, man. They better be careful because the Steelers are silently playing really well, and Aaron Rodgers, as I spoke about many times, is in his second season coming off that ACL, and he's looking like old Aaron Rodgers. And he's in an offense where Mike Tomlin allows him that freedom that he likes to have that he had under Mike McCarthy, where he can kind of just do what he wants at the line. He has the receivers who can produce. So the Steelers can sneak in there. They're a real opportunistic defense. They're not solid on defense, kind of old. But as you saw last week against the Patriots, that can cause turnovers, and they focus on causing turnovers. So Lamar should be careful. They're 1-2 right now. I'm sure they probably still win the AFC North some type of way. They'll make some adjustments, but I still consider them as pretenders in their ability to win the Super Bowl this year. Now let's get to the team that they play, and that's the Detroit Lions. I think that the Detroit Lions are definitely a contender, best running back duo in the league, best head coach, in my opinion, in the league right now. He has his teams most prepared to play. Best offensive lineman in the NFL, and Penei Sewell. This guy had the highest single game running game blocking grade ever in PFF history. He had 98.7 overall grade. That's the highest ever. All of their skill positions, they're A-plus at. They have Goff, who's a solid quarterback that's been to the Super Bowl. They have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's clearly a really good wide receiver, one that plays in the slot, that can block, that has really great hands. Jameson Williams, we didn't see much of him against the Ravens because the Ravens were probably dropping back deep, but it's going to be plenty of games where teams are going to decide to go man-to-man and run blitz to try to slow down that dominant run game that they have with David Montgomery and with Jahmyr Gibbs. And in those games, Jameson Williams is going to show up. He's going to burn you. This kid is extremely fast. In my opinion, if he played in the national championship game when Alabama lost to Georgia, you saw in the first half before his injury, they were winning. Alabama was winning the game. I think Alabama wins it. He was that big to that team. He's that much of a playmaker. That tight end is really good. Sam Laporta, his all-Iowa tight ends, is really solid. As we talked about, great offensive line led by Penei Sewell as the anchor. Then you now have Aiden Hutchinson back on defense, who's their playmaker, their spark plug. And Kelvin Shepard is doing a good job learning on the go. I think that Aaron Glenn was really overrated as a DC. The thing that Campbell does is he gets guys jobs. Anytime a head coach is getting his guys gigs in the NFL as head coaches, he's creating his own tree. And that kind of shows you how good of a coach Dan Campbell is. I just took the Lions at plus 480 to win the NFC. I think that this might be their year to sneak in there and get it done. I know that next time they play the Packers, it will be a completely different game in Detroit. So I took them at plus 175 to win the NFC North as well. I think that they can get it done for the third straight year as the champions of that division. So the Lions are definitely a contender. All right, let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts being led by Indiana Jones now. They've started the 2025 season really impressive. You know, 3-0 record. They're currently ranked highly in several performance metrics. They're second in total offense. They're second in points per game. Their defense is seventh total defense, and they're ninth in points allowed per game, which is really good. They have a solid head coach, Shane Steichen. Shane Steichen was the guy who was the OC when Jalen Hurts threw for 300 yards in the Super Bowl, and the game came right down to the end, but they weren't able to beat Kansas City. He's done a really good job over there in Indiana. Indianapolis has a much better roster than people presume. Daniel Jones has revitalized his career under the great coach of Shane Steichen. Another thing, Jonathan Taylor's returned to his form. And Jonathan Taylor is one of the best running backs in the league. He had a really good game last week, 165 yards rushing. His presence alone on the field opens up so much. Underrated weapons on the outside and at the skill positions as a whole for the Colts. You got Alex Pierce, reminds me of Jordy Nelson. This guy, he's just, he doesn't even look like he's running hard, and he's just leaving defenders. Really great at high point balls and making big plays down the field and drawing pass interferences. Donnie Mitchell, this year he's starting to pop because he finally has a quarterback that can get him the ball. If you watched him enough at Georgia and at Texas, you know Donnie Mitchell can play. Then you have Josh Downs, another kid. His rookie year, or excuse me, freshman year at North Carolina, people were saying he was going to be the number one receiver took in his draft, but he kind of, you know, plateaued out just because you're in college, he's a kid, a lot going on, and he didn't stay on his craft, but he still has the blazing speed, still has the good hands. And then they also drafted one of the best rookies we've seen in Tyler Warren. And Tyler Warren is just a really good player, man. He can do a lot of things on the field and do them at a really high level. I think that Tyler Warren really tilts this team to being a really, really top-tier offense because of his versatility. And it's the second tight end isn't bad either. Mo Alley Cox, he was a guy that played basketball over at VCU, Virginia Commonwealth, and then decided that he was going to be a tight end. And he's been a really decent one in the NFL, scored numerous touchdowns last season. And he's really good for them when they use the two, you know, tight end packages and things like that. The Colts defense, it's middle of the pack, but the main thing that I like about them is they're really solid in the red zone. As I said, ninth in points allowed, seventh in total defense. They have struggled with third down conversions, though, allowing opponents to convert 42% of their attempts. Also, they have some vulnerability in pass defense. They're ranked 21st. If they can, they get in a shootout with some team, they'll see if Daniel Jones can allow them to stay in the game. Also, the rushing defense is a concern because they're allowing 100 yards per game. I think that the Colts are a team that's moving forward. They're a good stock to invest in the future. But as far as in this season, I don't think that they're real contenders. I see them as a pretender because even if they make the playoffs, I don't think that they can make any noise. And we're still early in the season. We'll see if Daniel Jones can continue to stay hot. All right, the last team that we're going to talk about in contenders or pretenders is the L.A. Chargers. That's everyone's favorite team. They remain undefeated, unlike the Packers, because at first everyone was talking Packers and Chargers are the best two teams in the league, but that quickly changed after Jordan Love's performance in Cleveland. Kind of brought the fan base and people who watched this, the prognosticators, back to earth. And you know, I always approach this in the same way. It's always for me big picture. Like, as a sports bettor, you can't get too up, can't get too down. As an analyst, I can't get too up, too down. I just rely on the data, but I'm also aware from many years of doing this of how quickly things can change. And you have to always be able to factor that in, that yeah, this team is looking so good right now, but long term, can they maintain this excellence? The one thing great going for the Chargers is having Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh is an excellent coach. He's been great everywhere he's been, whether it's been San Diego University, Stanford, San Francisco 49ers, Michigan, and now with the Chargers. He had a really great quote that if I'm Justin Herbert, I'm loving. He said that my job is to make this kid a Hall of Famer. So Justin Herbert finally has a really good coach. Justin Herbert has always had the skills. Really solid guy, really good teammate, strong arm, fast, but he has not been able to come through in the most important games for them when it mattered. So we'll see if he continues to play as well as he's played so far. You got a rejuvenated Quentin Johnston. Now he's looking like the guy he was at TCU when he was a really great deep ball guy for that team that made it all the way to the national championship. He had the dropsies the first couple of years, but now it seems like Harbaugh has gave him his confidence back. One of the most solid guys you want to find in the slot. He won the national championship as the number one receiver in Georgia. That's Ladd McConkey. He shows up every game. You know, he's starting to become what Cooper Kupp used to be. I really like Ladd McConkey. And then they got the OG, Keenan Allen. I don't know what's wrong with his shoulders. They look like the joints are coming out like he's about to take off and fly, but he can still play, man. Keenan Allen started football in high school as a quarterback. That's one advantage that he's always had in the NFL. And guys wonder why he's so good at getting open. It's because he sees the game as a quarterback, and he's just a solid veteran that you want on your team. I really like the Chargers defense. Jesse Minter, right now, I'd probably say he's might be like the number one coordinator that will be teams will be looking to hire next year. He's done a really good job over there with that defense. Total defense, they're eighth ranked. Points allowed, they're 14th. Rushing defense, 10th. Passing defense, 11th. Third down conversion rate is pretty good, only 35%. Red zone touchdown rate, they have to work on because they're allowing 57% of scores, but teams aren't really getting into the red zone with them. They also lead the league, though, in takeaways. That's very important, man. When you got an offense as good as they have, you really want to be able to control the ball. And if you could take the ball and give short fields to Justin Herbert, that's always a good thing. They've struggled consistently stopping the run. So even though they ranked 10th in rushing defense, sometimes they have been allowing some significant yardage in critical situations. But overall, I think that they're going to be a solid defense all year. The one thing that will keep me from calling them true contenders is their running game. When it gets cold, I cannot expect Justin Herbert. I know he's in L.A. and the weather's going to be good, but they have to play on the road. I don't know if that game they played against Kansas City was considered a Kansas City home game or a road game. I don't have my schedule in front of me now. You guys help me out in the chat if you guys know when they play Kansas City next time, whether it will be a game in Kansas City or a game in L.A. But they for sure are going to have to go to Denver and other spots. When it's cold, you got to be able to run the ball. And right now they only have one rushing touchdown. So, you know, the top running back, he's gone for the season. They came over there. Najee Harris. Shout out, Najee. I hope you heal up. I met Najee Harris in San Francisco maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And really, really good guy. I really like that kid. Really positive dude. Really great energy. He's from that Frisco area. So we ended up falling in at the same time at a little party and linking up. And he got hurt last week, and he's gone for the season. He blew his Achilles. So now everything's on the rookie out of North Carolina. We'll see. Can he handle it? He has some burst. He has some speed. But how does he pick up blitzes and things like that, the things that you don't really notice unless you're watching the All-22? We're going to see. Unless they get their running game up, I got to name them a pretender for right now. Good start. But as you saw last week, the Broncos had the game. Great play by Justin Herbert to win that game. But I just can't trust the Chargers just for simply their history. And until Justin Herbert shows me in the playoffs that he can do it, I just can't believe in it. So that's for the contenders and pretenders. I'm going to get to some comments and see what you guys think about that. Let's see. Thank you, Big Go. I know my boy is a real big Chargers fan. So he says that was a home game for the Chargers, so they will have to go to Kansas City and deal with that weather. K.I. Trey says, what up, chat? Shout out the real. That's right, man. It's always the real here in the waiting world. We appreciate you for tuning in, my brother. Zeke say he took Busca to win the first set down 5-2 for plus 675. Good job, Zeke, and you cashed. I pride myself in teaching a lot of different markets. And one of the main markets that I pride myself on is bringing tennis more to this community and to other bettors who I'm friends with. Because, you know, everyone thinks about football, baseball, basketball, three major sports in the United States. And, man, it's just that you have to go and find the money. Like, tennis is a much better game to handicap and much better market because it's only two players. So when you're dealing with football, you got to deal with 11 guys. You got to worry about doing a job. Basketball, 5, you know, baseball, 9. So the advantage with tennis to me has always been the one-on-one. A1 says, how do you feel about the Heisman Trophy market currently? Man, our guy Taylor Green's team knocked him out of the money on that one. We're going to hold the ticket and see if he can play really well this week against Notre Dame, if they get the upset against Notre Dame at home, he's back in it. But, man, we would be really looking good if they were undefeated as they were supposed to. At those situations, the 99% that we had lost to the 1% because Ole Miss was driving, Arkansas was driving on Ole Miss to score the winning touchdown. Less than a minute left, they were in an awesome position to win that game at Ole Miss and upset the Rebels and just really pretty much put everyone on notice that Arkansas was here. They smoked the game. Memphis, there's no way they're supposed to lose to Memphis as -7 favorites. You know, like, that makes no sense. They were in complete control of that game all the way to the final minute and blew it. And that's going to hurt his resume a lot. So from there, I'm going to pivot to, I'll probably look at Jaden Maiva because we know that Lincoln Riley has had some Heisman Trophy winners under him before. Besides that, maybe you want to look at Carson Beck over in Miami. You know, Miami's playing well. He's playing well. But my choice would probably be Jaden Maiva. What's up, brother? My guy said, what's good, Five? Salute, brother. Tremelli says Taylor has the chill on the intercept. Well, if you look at his season, the only interceptions that he had, multiple interceptions, was against Memphis. So I just think that was that game. I don't think he's been turning the ball over a lot. Let's see. Any more questions we got before we get to the next segment? Carlos says, everyone remember the video of Campbell on the plane, but goes to show don't judge a book by its cover. That's correct. My guy Tim, who's a big Lions fan, I did tell you that, Tim. He said, you told me relax and don't hit the panic button on the Lions yet. That's exactly what I told him after the Packers results. All right, guys, let's get to the next segment in the show. If you've been watching the show a long time, you remember kick the damn extra point. It all started from the name of this segment because I used to get so agitated as a sports bettor when I have points or I'm laying points and the coaches are in a situation where you could get points up. Brandon Staley, when he was the coach of the Chargers, kind of initiated me making this segment because so many times he would go for unnecessary downs and stuff, fourth downs from crazy positions. And also Mike Tomlin, because Mike Tomlin had a little moment for some reason that he started going for two every time. And I was just like, kick the damn extra point. It doesn't make sense. And that kind of sprung this whole segment. And now what I use it for is just pretty much to talk about bad coaching and who needs to make some adjustments as coaches. So the kick the damn extra point award winner this week is going to be Nick Caley from the Houston Texans. The Texans are currently sitting at the bottom of the league in several key metrics, man, including total offensive yards, points scored. Man, they struggle significantly. They're only throwing for 173 yards a game. 172.3, so I'm not going to even round it up. 172 yards with a player as good as C.J. Stroud is. Only rushing for 95 yards per game. 0-3 now, man. They've only scored 38 points for the entire season. And this problem has been going on for two seasons now with the Texans. People are saying, well, you know, maybe they shouldn't have fired Bobby Slowick. I will give Bobby Slowick his card in the fact that he was a much better play designer. He just had problems situationally calling the right plays. But according to True Meter, the Texans offense ranked 31st in success rate last season, while their defense ranked first in success rate. That's not what you want. The Texans are the only team with two defensive ends who are always in the top 10 for pressures. Right now, Will Anderson leads the league in pressure rate, and Daniel Hunter is, I think, ninth ranked. He's in the top 10, though. He's a really good player, veteran from LSU. Guy from Houston, so I'm always rooting for Daniel Hunter. The Texans offense is the sole reason that they're 0-3 right now. They have to figure out a way to get CJ Stroud's confidence back. And it all starts with Nick Caley. This kick the damn extra point award is actually a co-award, because I got to give it to D'Amico Rhines as well. I love D'Amico. I think that D'Amico is a solid dude. I think that he did a great job of taking nothing that the Texans were at the time, being a laughing stock of the league, and turning them into a real, you know, threat in the AFC. And it all started with the side of how he knows defense. But D'Amico has not put enough time into the offensive side of the ball. He has not put enough time into hiring the right offensive line coach first. People don't understand, the most unheralded coach on the team is the offensive line coach, and he's the most significant in many ways. And teams that are really good always have great OC coach. If you go O-line coach, if you go look back at the Patriots, they had a really good offensive line coach for many years that was tied to Bill Belichick's hip. The moment that he left, they start to struggle. And I think that D'Amico's decisions on offensive line coach and on offensive coordinator have really been the detriment to this team. He's going to have to fix that. He has to understand that I don't want to be the smartest guy in the room. Go find a veteran with a proven track record. But until then, it's very important that he take the play sheet away from Nick Caley. If you've watched all three games like I have, I watched them both several times. When I see the Texans offense, it's really upsetting. You have no pre-snap motion. You have no deception. You have no type of scheme. You go watch the Lions play, even the Ravens play. You see their offenses, you're like, wow, I haven't seen that before. You never see that with the Texans. He's lining up in shotgun and throwing the ball 90% of the time. He's lining up under the center and running the ball 90% of the time. The Texans rank last in motion before plays. And I talked about that earlier on a different show about the fact that the way that you give a key to a quarterback is with motion. So he knows what if the defense is going to be running man or they're going to be running zone. Don't get me wrong, it's some combo packages that sometimes defense coordinators who are really, really, really sharp, you know, they use where they might trail you as if it's man and then drop in the zone. But the teams they have played aren't on any of that. They could have seen early what they were doing. Nick Caley is not utilizing his team right. He's not taking advantage of the burst that Woody Marks has. He's not taking advantage of the juice that he could get from the two kids from Iowa. I watched those two kids play every week. They were probably the best receiving tandem in college football. You have to get Jalen Noel moving horizontally. You have to get him in positions where he's moving in motion and getting to the slot, or he's already lined up in the slot where he can get a safety or linebacker on him and outrun them horizontally and give him a chance to run with the ball, to get yards after the catch. You have to use Higgins' height and his speed. This kid runs about a 4.4, 4.5. He's 6'4". He's just like Nico. Why aren't you utilizing him on seam routes, throwing the ball high? Why aren't you utilizing him on back shoulder plays? He has a great catch radius. So, Nick Caley, kick the damn extra point. You have to pass that play sheet to Gerard Johnson. Gerard Johnson came up under Sean McVay and Kevin O'Connell. Maybe Kevin O'Connell's playbook is still in Jerry Johnson's data in his brain somewhere, or maybe he still can refer to the playbook that he used to have. Use some of the plays from Kevin O'Connell. Stop coming out here with this vanilla mess and kick the damn extra point to D'Amico Rhines for first hiring all of these new booties to be your offensive coordinator, guys who have never been under the bullets. Dude, this is your team. This team is going to go as far as CJ Stroud goes, not the defense. Defenses are cool, but this is a 1980, man. You cannot win without having a good defense and a great quarterback. You have to have a great quarterback, man. And he's taking all of the confidence from CJ Stroud right now by getting him the wrong quarterback coaches. Well, we'll see if Gerard Johnson is the right quarterback coach, but right now it doesn't look like it, but maybe it's the play call. Give Gerard Johnson the sheets. Save your job, man. Save your job, D'Amico. Kick the damn extra point, man. You have to save your job take the play calling from Nick Caley, and let's focus on the offense. You already have a good defense. You guys have only given up maybe 17 points per game in all three contests against some really good offenses. So, come on, man. You have to put yourself in a position to win, and the way you do that is stop being hard-headed. Stop allowing Nick Caley to call these vanilla plays. All right, guys, let's get to the present. Got some good matchups on Thursday. You know, on Wednesday, we like to talk about all of the matchups for Thursday. Get those out there to you guys because I do not do a show on Thursday. Wednesday, I warm everything up for you guys. Let's start with Army at East Carolina. The line has dropped from Army plus 5.5 to Army plus 5. My group has already played this game. I like the Black Knights here. The Black Knights are 1-2 despite having a really strong offense. They have excelled at putting up points, man. They forced North Texas to overtime after seemingly being out of that game. The key to Army is their quarterback, Dwayne Coleman. He's back. He missed one game, and now he's back under center. He leads the team in rushing and throwing the ball. You got ECU on the other side. East Carolina has a good quarterback in Caden Hauser, but Caden Hauser makes mistakes. He's mistake prone. Army has shown itself to be a really opportunistic team. They've also showed themselves to be a team that plays hard until the final whistle. Last year, they blew out East Carolina 45-17, but they had a completely different regime at quarterback last year in offense. Their quarterback was outstanding last year. He was a one-man Army. But I think that Army is really hungry for a win right here. I think that even though their defense isn't that good, man, they are so good on offense and running the ball as they're ranked fourth in the country, averaging 301 yards per game, that I believe that the Black Knights can play keep away. I think East Carolina is going to have a tough time getting them off the field. They also got to be a little beat up after playing BYU. And BYU is a really physical team in the trenches, and they run the ball really well. I think that coming off BYU, short week, and now you got to deal with these Army offensive linemen hitting you, cut blocking you on the line. A lot of people don't realize how much Army and Navy cut block at the line, man. It's illegal, but they get away with it more than most because kind of like with defenses that teach their defensive backs to hold the receivers, the referees aren't going to call it every play. So they're going to be dealing with a lot messing with this Army offense. As I said, the Pirates are pretty good on offense. They got Anthony Smith, who's a really good receiver. He's been really productive this year. And, you know, he's one of their returning starters, but he hasn't scored a touchdown. My problem, as I said, with ECU is you got a passing game because ECU's going to have to throw the ball because they only average 131 yards a game running. So they're going to have to throw the ball to convert because they will be behind early on the sticks. Now you got to see if they can outpass a team that's going to run it because we know the Army's going to set themselves up for short yardage all the time. They're going to be third and three or less most of the times. They really excel at getting 4 yards at least on first down. That's always been their approach. And I just think that Army is going to be able to keep this one close. I wouldn't be surprised if they win it. So give me Army plus 5.5. On that one. I think that they're able to cover those points. I think that this game, either Army wins this game going away or it's very close. All right, let's get to Thursday night football. Going to be the Seattle Seahawks -1.5 at Arizona. Seattle has dominated this matchup, guys. I mean, whether it was Pete Carroll or it's Mike McDonald, they just beat the hell out the Cardinals. I want to say maybe 8 straight times, 9 straight times. And covered maybe 7 of those against the Cardinals. Kyler Murray has to hate when he sees the Seahawks pulling the town. Last year, they didn't win a game against them either. And Sam Darnold, he's doing pretty good. 4 touchdowns, but still 2 interceptions. I've always been a guy who thinks Sam Darnold has all the talent in the world, but he just makes too many boneheaded decisions. You guys, if you've been watching the show since the inception, you know that I love Kenneth Walker III. We were betting him when he was at Michigan State. The last time Michigan State had a really good team, he was the cowbell over there. Also, the Seahawks ranked second in points allowed, only giving up 15.7. We know that McDonald, that's his side of the ball, is defense. Jonathan Gannon is also a DC. You know, he come from being with the Eagles when they got to the Super Bowl with Kansas City and left after that year and joined the Cardinals. And he's done a pretty good job leading this turnaround, especially on the defensive side. They're ranked fifth in points allowed, only giving up 17 points per game. But Arizona is 30th ranked versus the pass. So they have to be careful about Sam Darnold and Jaxon Smith-Njigba, because Jaxon Smith-Njigba is a really good receiver. But the thing about Arizona that's weird is they're also ranked top five in completion percentage allowed. So even though they're 30th ranked against the pass, I think it's because teams get a little frustrated because they can't run the ball on them, because they're top five in every category against the rush. And I think they start throwing a lot. So that's why you see them being 30th. It's probably in yards, but they're not meaningful yards. And they're really good at stopping, you know, the percentage that the quarterback can complete. And that's going to be problems for Sam Darnold, because Sam Darnold already isn't a high completion guy. Now you get down to what we're going to see from my guy, Kyler Murray. You know, I'm a lot higher on Kyler Murray than most people. I feel like he was raised to play the position with his dad being one of those guys like Charlie Ward, like Warren Moon, who kind of got overlooked because at the time in the 80s, race played a big part in drafting quarterbacks. And his dad owned all the A&M passing records for a long time until like Johnny Manziel came about. And he didn't get his due, but he's a great quarterback coach in the Dallas area. And he prepared his son to be a quarterback. Unfortunately, he didn't get the height, but he does have the skill level. He's going to need Marvin Harrison Jr. to get out of slump. They're running some plays where Harrison Jr. is wide open. He's just dropping the ball. I think this is a great opportunity for that kid to bounce back. We saw what type of play he was at Ohio State. He also second-generation player with his dad, the great Marvin Harrison, one of the real G's in Philly that was just spectacular for the Colts for so many years. I think that he talks to him, gets him right. We know that you're not going to stop their tight end, Trey McBride. He's really good. They will be without their starting running back, who's really good, James Conner. He's been solid. He overcame cancer twice, just a really great presence in the locker room, but he's hurt. But I do like Trey Benson, who's their backup running back. I think that Trey Benson has a little bit more pop than Connors does at this stage in his career. I'm going to go contrarian on this one. I know that Seahawks have a long history of beating up on the Cardinals, but I think the Cardinals are different this year. As we saw last week against the 49ers on the road, they really should have won that game. They ended up blowing it, but it was low scoring. I lean towards the under for sure. We know how Thursday night games are, short week. And these guys tend to go under on when we have these situations. So I definitely lean on the under on this game for sure. But if I play a side, it's going to be Arizona plus the 1.5. They might end up losing by one again, because that's how the books do. They make these tight games. They'll throw a plus 2 out there, plus 1.5, to try to get you to go money line on either side. And you're really shorting yourself. Never pass up points if you can get points in the NFL. I'll go to the comments right now and see if you guys got any questions for me or any opinions on this one. Tram asked, what do you think about Castellanos for Heisman? Castellanos is a good player, man. I followed him since he was at Boston College. He's undersized, but he's explosive. And he's very, very confident in himself. Like, he believes in himself, and he plays really bigger than his size, which is always a great thing. We'll see how the season shakes out for Florida State, if they have enough big games to get him to the Heisman, because the ACC is weak this year. You know, they needed Clemson to be good in order to help them from when they play them, but Clemson isn't good at all. Georgia Tech is decent, but how big of a brand nationally is Georgia Tech? So on that one, man, I don't know, man. I don't think he can get to the Heisman. They got a tough game from the numbers. It's looking like Virginia might stir it up with them a little bit this week. They're laying 7 on the road on a Friday. When all those Friday games are in college football, they're usually really, really shady. So we'll see what happens on that one. My guy, Jersilky, says he likes the Cardinals plus 1.5. He feels better laying minus 1.5 with the Cards. Glad the line flipped. So we have some line flip. I haven't looked at it this morning. Is that the new line is now the Cardinals' favorite now, guys? Let me see. Yeah, I'm still showing Cardinals getting plus 1.5 and at even money on mine. Or are you saying that it opened up maybe with the Cardinals at minus 1.5? Maybe that's what Jersilky Man 412 is saying. But right now I'm getting plus 1.5, and I'll most likely be playing it. And the under is 43.5. That's a really low number. But with these two teams, man, I don't know. Let's see. Jersilky says Cards was favorites, but now dogs. I'm glad it flipped. I didn't feel comfortable laying points with the Cards. Yeah, it's just because offensively they've been struggling. But, man, that defense is lights out. They might be without Will Johnson. I'd like it better if they had Will Johnson there because he's a really good slot corner, the rookie out of Michigan. Good player just overall. I'd love to see him on JSN, but I don't know if he's going to be available to play or not. All right, guys, you know what time it is now. Time to get to that world famous, the ball and parlay. As you guys know, we still have Jason Brooks pending right now. So we'll see how that goes. We got him at even money against Umber in Japan. Also, I'm going to give you guys my group play. I'm going to play Army plus 5.5. They will be facing off against East Carolina. I just don't think East Carolina is tough enough in the trenches to mess with Army at all. All right, now let's go to the women's side. Let's see if we can find us two winners over here. All right, let's go with first set. We're going to roll with Lin Zhu. This is her home tournament. She'll be playing in Beijing. She's from China. She tends to start fast. We can get her at minus 125. As you see, for the match, it's minus 125. So the books are telling you most likely Zhu's going to get it done. So we're going to go Lin Zhu first set only against Mayuka Uchihima, because Uchihima, she's a good player, but she starts slow. She always loses the first set and then stirs it up later. So we're going to go with Lin Zhu in her home tournament to win the first set on that one. And I also like American Ann Lee at to win the first set against Camila Osorio. Osorio struggles with her serve. She is a feisty little player, though. These two have played each other before, and they've been 1-1. But I like Ann Lee the first set. Ann Lee has been playing really good offensively. I think that she'll be able to hold the serve more times than Osorio, at least early. So let's hope that Ann Lee starts out with business on her mind and doesn't, you know, wait till the second set to start playing. So we got three straight bets right there. We're going with Army plus 5.5. We're going with Lin Zhu first set minus 125 against Uchijima out in China. And we're also going to roll with American Ann Lee first set at minus 140. As you see the drop off on that one, she goes from minus 180 to minus 140 on the first set. So the books feel like the first set is up for grabs, but I'm going to trust that Ann Lee is able to serve better than Osorio right there. I appreciate everyone for tuning into The Waging World, episode 11, man, contenders and pretenders. You guys come up with a great plan. If you're a sports bettor and you're going at it solo, get on your game, focus, stop listening to what you see on TV. The media is not your friend, at least not mainstream media. Go find guys like myself who are on the grind every day out here really making bets, and guys who are using our own data. You'll have a lot better results if you get your game from, you know, shows like The Waging World, if you get your game from other sports betting shows that you only see on YouTube that are not on the mainstream media. The mainstream media and the books work hand in hand. That's why you see all of the casinos and stuff are having all these deals with the sports leagues. And you see all the commercials on Fox and on ESPN to get you to bet. Don't be a fool. This is your money. This is not for fun. Anytime your money's involved, it's never fun. So I personally don't like losing money. I like making money. So if you guys want to be a real sports bettor, you want to go at it on your own and make money, make sure that you stop listening to the mainstream media and their opinions, because they work right hand in hand with the casinos and books. And instead, find some reputable sources to get some game from. But most of all, see yourself approved. Study to see yourself approved. Go watch these all 22s. It's easy to sign up to get the games. Go rewatch the games on YouTube, not just the highlights. Watch the game. See what's going on in the trenches, because most games are decided in the trenches. See how these quarterbacks react when the pressure's on. How do these quarterbacks play on third down? How do they play before the half when they're trying to score? How do they play for the full game when it's an opportunity to win the game or tie the game? These are some of the things that I use in my model that I'm happy to give to all of you. I make my money from the books. I don't have to do the show. I do the show only for one reason. It's pro bono work, man. I want to give back, and I want to make sure that I make all of you better bettors. Also, if you guys aren't good and you're losing a lot of money, come hit me on my DM, hit me on X. I'd love to consult you. I've been one of the best betting consultants in the game for the last 10 years or so. I have really good clientele, guys that I love, guys that are really successful because they listen to my advice. As a consultant, I'm no different than Merrill Lynch. If you're going to trust me, play my plays. Don't go on your own. If you're going to go on your own, then that's on you, man. Teach yourself, learn how to bet, sharpen your skills, and make you some money. But if you're just trying to make money and you want to use this as an ancillary income and you know that you're not good at it, go hire a professional, whether it's myself or someone else. I have one of the most successful private groups in the country, in the world, when it comes to betting sports. And football season is really our thing. We do really well with tennis, but right now the focus is always football until the Australian Open runs back around. I like the beginning of the tennis season when all of the players still have something to play for. Right now, you're not going to get the best results because all the majors are over. So we focus on football and specifically college football. So I've had several people hit www.thewageringworld, which is my website. Thanks for the guys who ordered the merch. All of your purchases are out in the mail and they're on the way. If you guys get them, make sure that you post it on X and show me a picture of the shirt that I sent you guys. I had a couple orders for the It's Us Versus the Machine. I appreciate you guys. But the people who are contacting me on the website about getting into the group, please contact me on X. Shoot me a DM. If you can't receive a DM from me, add me on, you know, the TL, and I'll make sure to DM you. This is not a cheap program because we win. This is for guys who are real investors and who are trying to make money. So if you reach out to me, also know that right now I'm only doing monthly subscribers. I'm not doing weekly anymore. Too many guys coming in, getting information, doing well with me, and then they make their own bets individually by themselves and kind of sink their ship. And then now I'm penalized. I don't want to work for free. You know, if I'm going to work and help you, my time demands money. So guys, make sure that if you do contact me, that you're a serious bettor and that you're willing to sign up for the month subscription. As always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan I know. That's my father, John H. Lindsay. I do this for you, Dad. I know he's very disappointed right now. As the Astros are, man, look like we're going home this year. Looks like no playoffs. As Joe Espada and the team continue to spiral, they have had some major injuries. Of course, the best player on the team, Jordan Alvarez, has been hurt. So I will give Espada some respite. But overall, this should still be Dusty Baker's team. And I think that this team would still be winning the AL West. But we can't go back in time and change that. Let's hope that the boys figure out a way to at least get into the wild card so we can have some October baseball as we've had for so many years in Houston. Rockets, big loss losing Van Fleet, man. FVV was the elder statesman of that team. He was going to benefit from being a kickout guy for Kevin Durant who's going to bring a lot of attention. Let's see how the Rockets approach. Do they go and find a veteran? Do they trade for someone like the kid from Detroit who just had the issues with the feds? They need someone who can stroke the ball from three with Van Fleet gone and them already struggling from three. Or maybe it's the time where the kid from Kentucky steps up and he's ready to, you know, for the moment, and Reed Shepherd. Texans, oh man, such heartbreaking stuff to watch as we see the promise of CJ Stroud's career just, you know, disappear in front of us each week. It's kind of the same thing we saw with Deshaun Watson before all of the bad press came out on him and the bad stuff that we found out he was doing. It already was starting to go bad on the football field as well. So is it an organizational thing with the Texans? I just know that Houston sports is in a bad place right now. And in the last couple of years, we've been in some really good places. So be appreciative of everything, guys. Don't take anything for granted, whether it's your real life or the team that you back. Hey, I'll see you guys on Friday. I'll be on with Ski, but I posted here so you guys can watch that either here on Ski's show. Even if you watch it on Ski's channel, come back over here and hit that like button. Let's get this algorithm going. I appreciate everyone who rocks with Five Star in Vegas. This is the Waging World. It's always us versus the machine.